On this episode, we watched Left Behind.
Is it about butts? I know that's what you like.
Yeah, it's about the left butt cheek. The Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
It's about time. I'm Stuart Wellington.
Enough of these dudes. Welcome Elliot Kalin into your hearts.
And now for the star, Hallie Hagland.
Hey, hold on a second. Real swooping in with coup d'etat. Yeah.
Not even an and featuring.
No, just this. And now the
and
star.
Introducing.
So Hallie, as the star of the show, what's different now that you're the star?
Yeah, I guess it's a lot of pressure on you, huh?
Yeah, you're really carrying this thing.
I don't know. I think I'm the kind of star that, like, you don't realize the storyline is really about at the beginning, and then all of a sudden you're like, why does she keep catching my attention?
Mm-hmm. I mean, usually the star you know right away because you recognize them. It's like a Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy type situation where you know it's Colin Firth the whole time because all the other suspects
I thought that was Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman's in it.
Gary Oldman.
It's the quickest
the
route.
The Gary Unmarried.
Gary Dying Alone is what it's called. Gary Oldman. Gary, old man, look at your life. That's Neil Young's song, ironically.
I'm a lot like Gary.
So this is a podcast. I probably don't need to reiterate that part of it.
Yeah.
Where we watch a bad movie and then we talk about it.
And now you listen to it.
And we got a special guest for your ears. You'll never guess who it is.
It's me.
The star of the show.
Hallie
Hagland.
Star of the show.
It's one of those shows like Blake 7 or something where the star, in quotes, doesn't appear for most of the episodes.
So I guess I'll leave.
See you later. Gotta go.
Walk away.
How slams giant away. Vault door. Sound effects of hoverboat. Just imagine what that sounds like.
Why does Hallie travel everywhere in a hoverboat?
Is that like a hovercraft, or is it a boat that also hovers?
Hey, man.
Is it like an enchanted pirate ship?
It's like a Flying Dutchman type thing that actually flies.
No, it's like what you travel through the Everglades with. Because I'm a bayou babe.
Yeah, it's a fan boat.
That's why you're wearing cutoff shorts.
And have a big machete knife in your hand.
And have a gator tooth necklace.
Yeah, I have this gator around my neck.
That's a whole gator.
That's a lot of teeth.
Gator stole. It's so uncomfortable. So knobbly. Yeah, she flies around in that ship that Bowser has from Super Mario World.
He has a ship?
It's a flying pirate.
Airship.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Huh? I thought it was the fan boat that Bayou Billy drove around in.
That's a different boat.
Okay.
Bowser uses that when he's on vacation.
So we settled that. That was the first order of business.
So we know that Hallie's a Bayou babe, just hunting nutria to sell their pelts. Picking crawdads out of the water and just sucking them down raw.
Yep.
So, this is the fourth most popular...
A real swamp person. What? Fourth most popular this is the
I use snakes for toothpicks.
What do you like? Picks? You like whip them out and they stay...
You freeze them?
I thought you said toothpaste. You just put a snake on a toothbrush and rub it in your mouth.
Yeah, and afterwards it's like, it's a living.
And the snake is like, no, contrary to popular belief, I'm not slimy. My skin is quite dry. So use them as toothpicks.
Yeah. Because that makes sense.
A real beast of the southern wild, Hallie Hagland.
I was going to say that this is the fourth most popular holiday on the Flophouse calendar.
After what? Shocktober?
Sure.
Smallvember?
Yeah. Cagemas. And now we got Cagemas in July.
Is it technically a different holiday?
Cagemas in July.
One is the shattery reflection of the other.
The shattery reflection?
Yep.
Like it's a kind of mirror.
Shattery men on a shattery planet.
For a CD I ever bought.
Yeah. So we watched a Nicolas Cage movie.
Yeah.
Left Agent Behind. Sings. Now this is a remake of a Kirk Cameron movie. So that's where Nicolas Cage
so
has sunk
up
to.
Up the star.
Or it's another adaptation of the same book.
Okay. Still, a book that previously was adapted into a Kirk Cameron vehicle.
Yes. and it's a
this
it's
isn't
a
exactly
Christian
a new version of Dracula.
No, no. I mean, I'm not saying this is a new production of Hamlet or something like that. I'm just saying that the source material.
I'm glad you're not saying that because this would be a very off-text adaptation of Hamlet. I do not remember the scene in Hamlet where Laertes was raptured, nor do I remember the scene where Hamlet had to land a plane with no no word
well,
from the
maybe
air traffic
Shakespeare
control.
Can where learn a little something about excitement.
Yeah,
in this
where
movie.
Do you think Yurik went?
What?
Uric acid comes out the bladder.
Yep. I don't know. I mean, in the original text, there was a skull, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
true.
What I'm saying. That's the guy who got raptured. Yurik,
everything
right?
but the Yurik. Skull got Yurik.
Robert Yurik.
I have an accent. I'm a Bayou babe with an accent.
Now, imagine if a guy got raptured and left his skull behind. His head would be all soft and mushy in heaven. It'd just be a brain inside of a skin set.
He was wearing a skull hat. It makes sense.
So his hat is here, not his real skull.
Yeah.
So when Hamlet picks up that skull, he should say, "Alas, poor Yorick, I knew his hat, Horatio." This
I
hat once
well.
Had a tongue
yeah,
that could
he was
sing.
Saying, "I knew him well. This was his favorite hat."
I rode the back of this hat often. Such jests came out of this hat. and his friend Horatio is like, "Hamlet, you be crazy." Anyway, so Left Behind.
Princes be crazy.
So, Dan, this is one of those religious movies.
Yeah, it's religious.
This has to do with that crazy religion that I'm not a part of.
Yeah, mine.
Except for what's called Christianity. It's
yeah,
some guy named Chris.
Chris Angel.
Yep, that's right.
He's a mind freak.
Angel
performs so many
and
miracles.
So saith the Lord unto the people, thy mind shall be freaked.
He performed the miracle of the freaked mind. And the miracle of the mind that was freaked.
And so the Lord did make himself seen at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square for a long-running engagement in thine theater space.
I mean, Christianity, you know, there's a lot of different sects. There's a lot of different...
Whoa. Hello.
Wow. Yeah,
talking.
How do you get so many of them?
How do you got they're... so many of them?
How do you think?
You're like, you sound like a kid in like an old 1950s commercial. How do you got so many of them? Well, Hallie.
So this is an evangelical movie.
Yeah,
except
this is,
they took a lot of the evangelical out of this movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as I said late in the movie, like this is the only movie where like the rapture is really a MacGuffin as a backdoor into a land a plane thriller. Yeah. But we'll get to that.
So should we start from the beginning?
Yeah, it's a very good place to start.
Where a young college student
movie explodes into your eyeballs.
Smash cut to beginning of movie.
Smash cut to the movie starts.
You buckle on your seatbelt.
Okay. Opening credits. Names fly fast and furious.
One of them is Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage, hence Cagemas in July. And let's just say this at the top. I'm just gonna say this at the top before we get to the plot. Nicolas Cage, somewhat out of place in this relatively low budget religious movie.
Yeah, because he's putting in a performance. Is it the best performance? No. But it's an actual
It's certainly the best
performance
in the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure of that.
The dude who played Herman's head did a pretty good job playing a pile of clothes.
He played Herman's
head.
Now imagine that the
it
show
took
is
four different actors to play Herman's head.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, dude.
I think we're overlooking the dwarf standout performance.
There is an angry dwarf in this film, and he's pretty great.
Don't look now. There's an angry dwarf.
Yeah, it ends with him stabbing Donald Sutherland to death.
Yeah. He has a overrated sex scene with Julie Christie.
Whoa.
Overrated? Wait,
hot
was someone
take.
Telling you that it was super sexy?
It is. Like, whenever you see one of those lists of, like, the sexiest sex
Donald
scenes,
Sutherland
like,
scene.
The most realistic sex scene.
Realistic, yeah.
Yeah.
Not sexy.
I don't even think it's that realistic. It's
what's
just like,
realistic about it is that he then brushes his teeth naked afterwards, which is very realistic about being
true.
A couple.
What's realistic about it is his pasty butt that is not.
Well, yeah,
he
didn't get a stunt butt.
Yeah.
If that's wouldn't it have been weird if he took off his clothes and then there were just close-ups of like this perfectly sculpted butt? Like a bodybuilder's butt?
John Cena's butt in there.
Yep.
Which would be weird
smuggled a pumpkin onto set.
He would have. Not existed at that time.
So what's great about that scene is it was one of the first scenes I saw that showed kind of like casual sexuality and nudity between a no, like a married couple being very casually just like nude, not in a sexual way, around each other, which is something I had not seen in a movie before then. So Don't Look Now, I guess, is a way
to. So is this a peek into your day-to-day life where you're just goofing around naked?
I mean, pretty much, yeah.
Running around.
Winnie the Pooh-ing it up.
They're all naked. Winnie the
Pooh wears a shirt.
Yeah, but you got your other undercarriage hanging out.
Sammy is naked a lot, but he's an 18-month-old kid.
I know, but I like imagining that you guys, too, are like, well, if that's the rule.
When in baby Rome. When in Lil Rome.
This is a clothing optional house.
Nothing in the
rule
book says I can't be naked.
It turns out you're all nudist. This like, we don't know about
this
it.
This isn't inappropriate until he's a little bit older.
Strip him off.
No, we don't hang out in the nude, but he's certainly.
Why? Are you ashamed of your body?
Oh, man.
What are you teaching
yourself? You have a beautiful body. Thank you should never be ashamed.
You know what? You're right. Let me just show it off right now. Unbutton.
It's like Chip and Dale getting naked in front of me.
Chip and Dale.
Both of the rescue rangers.
There's four rescue rangers.
I'll be Monterey Jack.
Five.
Well, oh, that little buzzy fly the shit?
There's the bug. There's Gadget, Monterey Jack, and I don't know, the bug. Whatever the fuck.
What has the bug ever done? I mean,
Zipper, to be honest,
Monterey Jack is a bit of a stretch to call him a rescue ranger since all he does is get hypnotized by cheese and get float around by his nose and get in the way and cause trouble. Gadget is holding that team together.
Yeah, no.
She's the Penny of the group.
Sure. We can all agree.
Yeah.
So I'll be Monterey Jack.
Okay.
Yes. I'll be Naked Chip and Dale.
Dale will be
Gadget.
That little shit bug you were talking about.
Penny had both an iPad and an iWatch before any of us.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Well, her dad was Steve Jobs.
Wait, so who is Inspector?
So wait,
what relationship?
He was her uncle.
Gadget.
Uncle Gadget.
So Gadget is Steve Jobs' brother.
Yeah, Steve Jobs' original name was Steve Gadget, and he thought it was too on the nose.
Yeah.
So he said, well, I'm creating many jobs with my company. I'll be Steve Jobs.
So his brother like must have gotten shot up in a RoboCop style gangland.
That's exactly what it was.
And Steve Jobs is like, I'll fix him. I'll make it better than
ever. The official backstory of Inspector Gadget is that he was injured by slipping on a banana peel.
Oh, really?
That's canon.
Oh.
Canon Films.
Golden Globus.
No, I like to think that Steve Jobs and Steve Gadget, but he wanted to move away from his klutzy family, and he was applying for a job, and they're like, so you say you want the job, huh? What's your name? My name's Steve Jobs.
Like, well, I like that name. That's the name of a winner.
Makes me think of a working man. I like it. I'll hire you to be a tech visionary. You're going to wear turtlenecks and never actually invent anything on your own.
Whoa.
Wow.
Dude, so many hot takes tonight.
Yeah, I know. We're just ripping out. We haven't even really talked about the movie very much. Okay, so the movie starts with...
Derail the end.
So easily done. College student Chloe Steele.
Are you sure that's not a sexy spy of some kind?
No, she's a college student and bootleg Veronica Mars.
Sure.
She has just flown into what is continually called New York.
By the way, Hallie just pulled out some notes, which I'm very excited to see.
These are notes for you later.
Chloe Steele flies into from college. She goes to the University of Central Arkansas, which we know from her sweatshirt. Now, Chloe flies into what is identified as New York, even though it is clearly the smallest city in the world. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's in the Midwest. Maybe it's in Canada. We don't know. To surprise her dad.
Probably in Eastern Europe or something.
Yeah. To surprise her dad.
Although there would probably be more machine guns.
And half the cast would have been kidnapped in the middle of filming. Her father, Rayford Steele.
Okay, wait, that's a
Rayford?
Name.
That Rayford is Nicolas Cage's character's name.
It's like someone tried to say Rafe Fiennes and like jammed it all together.
What's great is that he named his son after him, Raimi Steele.
Yeah.
Oh, Sam Raimi Steele.
Now, she wants to surprise her dad for his birthday, but he's busy. He's got to fly to London. She is mad at her mother because her mother, Leah Thompson, who has...
Had sex with a duck man one time.
Casual sex with Howard the Duck.
Back to the Future in the city with Caroline. Now, she's
it was true love, okay?
She's
which time?
God wouldn't judge it, yeah.
Or her and that guy she was engaged to
right
on that
Leviticus,
show.
Leviticus, thou shalt not lay with duck as thou wouldst with man or woman.
He
He wore a condom, dude.
Yeah. He doesn't even have a penis.
He wore clothes.
He must have. He had like a tiny...
Clothes make the man.
Ducks have weird, retractable corkscrew penises. There's no way that are specifically designed to go with duck vaginas. There's no way that was pleasurable for her.
You've researched, like, every animal's penis.
Did you look at, like,
in case I have to deal with one at some point.
Did Lucasfilm put out an incredible cross-sections for Howard the Duck with Howard the Duck's penis?
Inside you can see his retractable penis.
Look, the corkscrew might be, like, ribbed for her pleasure. You don't know.
I doubt it. Yeah, because when you put on a ribbed for pleasure condom, it feels like a corkscrew. Now, here's the thing. I've studied every animal's genitals in case I have to defeat them in a competition of some kind or a physical battle. Someday, if a bear penis comes at you, you're going to want to know how to block it and defeat it.
So, wait, is that where the phrase screwing comes from?
No.
Corkscrew penis?
No, I don't think so.
I'm imagining, I think Dean's on to something. Spinning around like he has to screw himself into the vagina.
Yeah, like Bazooka Joe doing a fucking flip take.
Yeah, it's just Howard the Duck's feet flying out panel. While
like
the penis
a fucking propeller.
He has to like pop the orgasm out. He spins in, and when he pulls up,
he pulls like the cork.
I don't even know what we're talking about anymore.
It's all a right. Corkgasm.
Now we're about 10 seconds into the movie. Leah Thompson's character has done a 180 from her duck fucking days, and she is now a hardcore evangelical Christian who's always trying to get her family to convert. That includes her daughter, college age, her husband, the pilot, who is hitting on a stewardess who doesn't know that he's married, and their son, who is this kind of nerdy little kid,
Remy.
Now, Chloe catches her dad hitting on this stewardess, and she is not happy about it.
Letting her wear his hat,
his pilot's cap, which is like pinning someone or giving them your varsity jacket. Yep. You're going steady.
Yeah. It's the opposite of a cuckold's horns.
Now, she originally, at first, she's pretty understanding because she thinks that her mom's religion has pushed her dad away as it's pushed her away. We know that she's a rationalist and not religious because when she runs into a famous investigative reporter named Cameron Buck Williams, while he's being harassed by an evangelical at the airport.
Played by One Tree Hill's Chad Michael Murray.
Yeah, she steps in and says, hey, why would God allow all sorts of bad things to happen? Why wouldn't he come in and stop them if you know they're going to happen and blah, blah, and so forth? And it's one of those moments
it's
where
great
you're like,
timing, though, right?
You're like, I know, yeah, because the rapture's about to happen, and the tribulations.
Yeah.
Where that is
a coincidence.
Watching it,
Isn't that weird?
It's weird.
Watching it, it was like, I know that she is going to be proved wrong by this movie, but she sounds so rational and reasonable right now compared to the.
I mean, other than the fact that she like just picked a fight with somebody in an airport.
Well, it's not like she punched her.
No, but like she intentionally like jumped into an argument.
That's true.
Like, have you ever jumped into an argument in an airport and had it turn out well?
I mean,
you're like, oh no, it's a Frankenstein's monster.
Well, I heard someone saying you look like a Frankenstein, and that guy had bolts sticking out of his neck, I'd make the case known. But most of my arguments at the airport are with airport employees. So,
not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I will say that one thing I kind of admired about this movie is. For a religious movie, it did present like the atheist characters as like not unreasonable people, like good people at heart, like, and the movie seemed concerned about whether they lived or died.
Or at the very least redeemable if they like use drugs or are an angry dwarf.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Do you think
and
this
even the
was
Muslim
really...
character is very positive in it.
Yeah. I feel like was this really a religious movie? Because it feel like it
well,
it's listed as a sci-fi thriller.
I know, but it doesn't seem to like glamorize. I mean, it doesn't seem to like, you know, make those characters the heroes or anything. It's
well, they
more
can't
just
be. They
like,
disappear.
Right, but it's more just like, this is us living real life down here on the planes that are crashing.
All those jerks up in heaven don't know what the
I think the original movie, the books are very much a niche market thing, although they sell, you know, millions of copies. And the original movies, I think, were for that market. My assumption with this movie was they said, we're going to tell this story in a way that attracts the non-religious audience. Mm-hmm. Did they accomplish that? No, they didn't. But like, I think you're right that they like downplay the religious angle a lot. They don't make it as black and white that these characters are bad people because they weren't, you know, devout Christians.
I mean, the only people who are raptured who are religious and not like, those people are totally annoying. So like all the kids are raptured.
And they're irritating.
Yeah. The kids aren't irritating, but like the two people, well, the mom and the lady at the airport who are supposed to be religious,
yeah.
They're like portrayed as like totally annoying.
Yeah, yeah, that's
real. So basically, it's like, I think the message is like, why do you want to go to heaven? Because people up there fucking suck.
Theoretically, it's going to get more fun down here, bro.
Yeah, when the
party. Pop them off. Well, pop some bottles.
Well, we can skip ahead to hard to get U2 tickets that are delivered from an airport employee
so 20
to
minutes,
the reporter to give to Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, like the hottest band in 2014.
Look, if you want hard to get tickets, here's who you have to talk to: a guy driving a little buggy around in an airport. He's got the hookup.
It feels like 20 minutes of the movie.
People move for him.
Exactly. They jump out of the way, or they jump onto the back of his thing with their hoverboards. But like, it feels like 20 or 30 minutes of this movie goes by and we're trapped in this limbo of an airport and only four characters have been introduced and it's terrible.
Man, Love Actually is all around. And you learn that at airports.
I guess you're
right. That movie was so good, though.
But that's a movie that has like 10 zillion characters.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Love Actually.
No, I thought you were talking about The Terminal.
I was talking about Airport 77.
Oh, yeah. That was the one where they all leave the airport and go see Star Wars in the theaters.
I thought you were talking about that Planes animated movie.
Yeah. The semi-sequel to Cars, but by someplace
spiritual. I thought you were talking about Cars the Band with Rick Ocasek.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about My Car that I had in high school.
I was talking about the sitcom My Mother, the Car, guys. You're all wrong.
I thought you were talking about my mom. Yeah, our mom, who's the same person and is a human woman.
Oh, boy. If you guys were twins.
I have a twin sister, Callie. Sorry, the position's taken.
I didn't even want to be your twin.
I can't believe you're making Hallie cry right now, all over her alligator necklace.
I saw what you wrote on your notebook at school. Elliot and Hallie Kalen, and then parentheses, not married, just siblings.
That's why they call them alligator tears.
Nobody's...
Back to the other thing that he said before about me crying on my alligator thing.
Yeah. So let's,
this thing moves too fast.
Let's skip ahead a little bit.
In the words of Old Town, it moves too fast. We don't have time to look at one another.
Just like in our town, my favorite play. But look, if you don't stop and smell the roses every once in a while, then something Ferris Bueller said.
Yeah.
something Ferris Bueller Cameron.
So let's skip ahead, shall we? Eventually we get to a point where Nicolas Cage's plane is in the air flying to London, and his daughter Chloe is at the mall with her younger brother watching an amazing breakdancing troupe, one member of whom actually slides across the floor on his head.
No, that was amazing. Was that a stunt or was that real?
I have to assume that was all animatronics.
Wait a minute. A stunt is real. It's not like it's like CGI.
No,
that's
Andy
not classified as a stunt.
Dance move CGI stuff. Yeah.
Okay. He performed that with a fucking ball suit or whatever.
Yeah,
a mocap suit.
Considering the special effects of the plane crash later, I'm going to say that was a real thing they just happened to catch on camera.
Or they blew their budget all on the guy sliding across the thing on his head.
They were buying the computer animation as they shot the movie in sequence. They spent it all on one background breakdancer.
Like, well.
Anyway, her brother.
Money well spent.
Her brother disappears in what I swear I thought was a puff of blue smoke, but maybe it wasn't. And something
sort of collapses.
It looks like she hugs him too hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't look like she hugs him so hard his clothing collapses in on itself. And then on the airplane, all the kids disappear and some of the random other people. There's a lot of craziness. People are going crazy. They don't know what's going on. They try to break into the cockpit. Nicolas Cage is out of the cockpit at the time, and his co-pilot, William Ragsdale from Herman's Head, who we didn't even talk about all this time.
Or Mannequin 2 on the move.
Yep.
Or Justified.
Or Justified.
Yeah, later season.
He's in Rustified. About a rusty robot cop.
Kentucky's terrible on their I guess, tin joints. I don't know.
Yeah, it's real humid down there.
Yeah, robot Givens. Everyone's going cuckoo crazy because they don't know what's going on. Society collapses almost instantly.
Immediately.
The mall goes apeshit. And people are looting, cars are exploding, and Chloe has one run-in after another where a piece of transportation tries to kill her. First, it's a little, like, two-seater plane that almost smashes into her.
No, it's first a car, then...
Yeah. Then it's a car... First, it's a car that flies through the doors of the mall. Then it's a two-seater plane.
Little fucking sandpiper plane goes right for her car, giving her just enough time to roll over the hood.
Like, the whole movie should have been just bigger and bigger types of transportation trying to kill her.
Yeah, basically.
Until, like, a submarine almost hits her.
A little school bus falls over and overpass and almost hits her. And then the climax of the movie is her running away, spoiler alert, from the giant plane that her dad's flying. So that's her arc.
Now, we've briefly before
which
the rapture.
Is a metaphor for her dodging her faith, which is the ultimate dodge.
Oh, you're right.
You're right.
Yeah.
Because
coming at her like a freight train, that thing.
No, no, like a plane.
Like a freight plane.
Some kind of cargo plane. Yeah. Now, they've introduced some characters on the plane before the rapture. I'll admit it.
There's a colorful cast.
There's a Muslim guy.
Some flakes on a plane.
There's a Texas millionaire who's always talking business. There's an angry dwarf who does not like anybody. Mm-hmm. There's a little girl who's the daughter of a football player. There's some fat guy with glasses.
And her mother is played by former American Idol Jordan Sparks.
That's true. It's full of stars.
Battlefield's Jordan Sparks?
Yeah.
Oh man, this movie must have been inside the Stargate that Dave Bowen flew into. Because my God, it's full of stars. So I should have said Keir Dullea. That would have made it more clear.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, but those characters are given
Keir
a very
delay.
We spent delay. Talk about delay. It's taking us forever to talk about this movie. So here's the thing. We spend a ton of time in the airport with the most boring characters. We get a couple minutes on the plane with this kooky, colorful cast. And then it's not
there's
long-
like the one English person on this flight to London.
Oh, the
who's
junkie.
A drug addict.
Who's a drug addict and wears a tank top.
But spent a lot of time.
Tank top
as
is highlighted more and more as the movie goes on.
But she spent a lot of time in Christian camps as a youth, so she's the only person who knows that the rapture is happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's also an old lady who is totally senile and her old husband, and the husband is raptured and the lady is not.
It's so fucked up. So you're just left to wonder,
she's
like, what did
on
this bitch do? Yeah.
Well, yeah. Turns out the Alzheimer was a curse from God.
Yep. Horrors of my actions have caused me to forget myself.
I like to believe it's a mixed marriage. He's Christian and she's a Satanist.
I think this was like a definitive statement that anyone who has Alzheimer's is being punished by God. If you know anyone who has Alzheimer's,
yeah,
they've got a secret.
Say goodbye to him because you're not going to see him in heaven, that's for sure. Here's the thing. We learned some rapture rules. All kids go to heaven. All dogs do not go to heaven.
Yeah, we saw a dog. It didn't go to heaven.
No, but its owner's clothes were sitting right next to it.
Weirdly, yep. All
old
frogs
people,
go to heaven.
Yeah, old people, not confirmed, not definite.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the owner's clothes.
We didn't see any cats.
There's certainly no cats. They are all in heaven. One of the things that's great is how every single set that has a person's clothes, it looks like somebody like took the time to set the shoes out right, like tuck the pants into the shoes. Like, that's what this person would have been doing.
Because when they were living, their pants were tucked into their shoes.
Yeah, that's what Christians
that's
do, Dan.
So there's a lot of trouble.
All kids get raptured automatically.
You think hardcore Christians, they tuck their pants in their shoes just in case they get raptured and it looks like.
So their pants don't fly away.
This movie would have been a lot more interesting if there was just like one kid who didn't get raptured.
Just like the kid from Problem Child or something?
He was going to be like, it was the kid from Good Son.
Elijah Wood or Macaulay Culkin?
Well, Elijah Wood's the
Culkin.
Bad one.
No,
well, Elijah Wood was
the bad one. You're right.
Wait a minute. What makes you think he's bad?
He doesn't need to throw that mannequin over the overpass.
I think we just found something disturbing about Elliot.
Yeah, Elijah Wood's the one who doesn't want to do that cool prank where they throw the mannequin over.
Macaulay Culkin just misunderstood.
It's Child Hitler.
Child Hitler.
Child Hitler.
Just like
little
an
Hitler.
Adorable little kid with
a
mustache.
Gotta be a
but
Johnny
don't you
Rotten,
think if, the, if there was one kid who didn't get raptured, all the people who are left over have an obligation to murder him because he's bound
he's
to be a terrible
the
person?
Antichrist. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I'm just thinking about Child Hitler's adventure.
All bad.
My tea party shall last 1,000 years. So forth. Anyway, he's a girl. He has tea parties. Anyway, so there's two parallel stories here. Chloe's trying to find her brother. She goes to her mom's house, and her mom has raptured away while taking a shower, which means Leah Thompson's just nuding it up in heaven. But I guess they all are, because all their clothes get left behind. Which, wait a minute.
That's
so,
it's a real sex orgy up there.
If heaven's going to live up to its billing,
yeah.
If you read the Divine Comedy, heaven is just everybody sitting looking at God, loving it the whole time. That sounds super boring.
But their original sin got taken away, so they don't feel ashamed of their bodies, right?
But I thought Christ's whole thing was that he cleansed the earth of original sin, right?
Then why are we all wearing clothes?
Good question. Let me take mine off right now.
Oh, it's Chip and Dale.
Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers.
So
okay, there's
left
two
behind refers to their clothes being left behind. Yes.
That's right.
Left behind like, refers
oh, my
to...
wallet was there too.
My ID.
I'm not going to be able to get it ahead.
I hope
you can leave your clothes behind, but take your Visa card because heaven doesn't take American Express.
No, all... someone left his Visa. Don't you remember?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Nicolas Cage finds William Ragsdale's
like Visa. Stock photo Visa.
They're all up there at the
1985 Visa
at the Heaven Bar, and they can't get any. Drinks.
That no one can start a tap.
And maybe that's God's big scam: is that he takes them without their clothes, and then they've got to buy heaven clothes at inflated prices.
Yeah, yep. Oh boy!
Like when you buy a
and he has
to
you have to buy them with like heaven bucks that you can only get from like going to a Dave and Buster's or some shit.
Yeah, and everyone's like, "These are just robes. I could use some sheets." Like, where are you going to get the sheets? There's one game in town.
If you
and
read
it's called God,
if you read between the lines of my New Testament, you'd know that Dave and Buster's is the one place to get heaven. Bucks. So
but what
stories.
Do they do to pay for to play the games at Dave and Buster's?
Mm-mm. Oh man, yeah. You don't want to know.
No, you do not want to know.
All right,
because
I mean,
we don't
like
know.
She kind of wants to know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Dan, tell her because I don't know.
I forget.
Great. Anticlimax all around. So there's two plot lines. Chloe's looking for her brother, and Nicolas Cage is trying to land this damn plane. He's tired of this motherfucking rapture on this motherfucking plane.
He flies it one way and then he turns around and flies another way.
Well, they're
and
running
then
out of fuel. They slam into another plane that has no pilot and they keep going. Chloe finds God after having a very awkward conversation with a pastor who was not raptured.
She sees that great sign that says the end is near, and they've crossed it out and written here.
Yep. Which I like to believe that someone's being raptured, and he was like, whoa, God, 1 second. And then he changed the sign. Okay, bring me up, big guy.
Well, because that's
my
the thing about
done.
That's the thing about like apocalypse movies. Apocalypse movies, everyone, like the first thing they want to do is start like graffitiing everything and like go over to the population sign of the city and cross it off.
There's always graffiti that says like get out or like it's over or something like
mm-hmm.
that. But society
they live because they live, guys.
Society is.
I don't even know who they are in this case.
Banksy.
Yeah.
You think there was a Banksy? That's right.
Banksy's is all over the place. It's like I don't even need to hide anymore.
It's so many stencils.
Banksy this up. Everything's gonna get Banksy'd.
There's just Shepherd Fairy obey things everywhere. And okay, so society's falling apart. Mm-hmm. People are dying. Cars are crashing into each other. People are just robbing and shooting all over the place. The rapture happened roughly 25 minutes ago, and already people are going nuts. Civilization just can't handle it, which is weird because not that many people get raptured in the movie, so you'd think civilization would be able to absorb that loss pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because they said millions of people got raptured. But how many people are there on Earth?
6 billion, roughly.
Exactly. So if we're in the millions, we're not even getting high in numbers.
It's a drop in el bucket-o, which as Hallie knows is Spanish for the bucket.
Can you confirm that?
That actually means something else.
Oh.
Really bad.
Oh.
I can't even say it on this podcast.
Have you been saying
and
that
I can
to,
say a lot of things.
Have you been saying that to people, Elliot?
Just to the guys
That's
who do maintenance and janitorial work at the show.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Hopefully they're not fucking
that's,
up their safety
I
checks.
By the way,
I wouldn't touch your poison trash can with the bomb in it tomorrow.
I want to make it clear that that's not a racist comment on Elliot's part. That's just a factual comment
the
about
guys
the nationality.
Who clean up our office. Are yeah. all native Spanish speakers.
That's right.
Like, I'm not ashamed to say it.
Okay,
wow. Okay.
Well, moving.
I guess I'm,
wow.
the, I guess I'm the only member of the silent
wow.
majority who's willing to say the truth. Anyway, Chloe is going to kill herself. She's going to jump off the top of a bridge. She's found
That's how you get to
now.
Heaven, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Dan?
Oh,
yeah, suicide is the one surefire way to get to heaven.
I thought she was just trying to get closer to her mom so she could deliver the message.
Maybe that's it. She's just climbing the top of a bridge. Hey, heaven, can you hear me now?
That's why I go to the top of the Freedom Tower.
What?
To get closer to heaven?
So, yeah, God. So I get as high as possible.
Well, it's weird because I've always thought that to get closer to God, I have to fuck me like an animal. It has not been working. But I'm going to keep trying.
Yeah, you keep
you know
trying,
what? I'm
right?
not going to stop. I'm going to keep trying. You know what they say? Try,
a lot,
try
lot
again.
Of grunting and spitting. Like Chippendale or wrestling over here.
Those corkscrew penises.
So many callbacks. Now, tensions are high on the plane. The dwarf and the Muslim got in a fight.
The dwarf is an asshole. Have we gone into
He's a big
length,
jerk.
At length?
And Dan, you said you did admire. I was being facetious. You said you did admire that the dwarf is a jerk.
Yeah, I feel like any other movie would feel the need to like make the dwarf character like a saint. And I like the movie that
what movie has ever done that?
Yeah.
What? I mean, like,
we already mentioned Don't Look Now.
I guess that's true. But I feel like a movie
and Basket Case?
In this modern era would be we can't risk the idea of like the dwarf being the bad guy. Rather, like, this movie actually treats the dwarf as a human being who might be an asshole.
I love that the assumption is like we've transcended any like negative stereotypes that we have about dwarves, and we're on the other side, and that it's now progressive to portray them like.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just feel like the casting did not seem to care like whether this was like a full sized actor or this is a dwarf.
It's all about him being a dwarf. Every line is about how he's a dwarf.
Yeah, his first line is about like someone trying to help him put his bag in the overhead compartment.
All right, you've turned me around on this.
I will say that the Muslim character, rather than being, he's not raptured. Clearly, the movie's stance is he believes in the wrong god, but. He's like the nicest character in the whole movie.
And he looks kind of like Jeremy Sisto.
Didn't you guys find the line problematic at all when someone's like looking in through his bag and he's like, a terrorist could never do this? As if like, yes.
He's an expert on terrorism, I guess.
Yeah. It's like, I see, like, that he would be synonymous with terrorist and even he would accept he's the like, premise.
Terrorists,
seemed a little problematic.
Terrorists I know would kill for a rapture device.
I did like that this movie blew the lid off the centuries-old rivalry between Muslims and dwarves.
Yeah, it's been going on beneath the surface for so long.
They've hated each other forever.
Yeah, that's the whole subtext of Game of Thrones, I think.
Yeah, I think in Anthony Bourdain's first book, he was talking about how in a kitchen you can't hire Muslims and dwarves to work in the same kitchen.
No, yeah.
It'll come to blows.
That's why it was Snow White and the Seven Dwarves.
And not what, Snow Mecca?
Not a Persian. I'm saying
not
wait what Snow White and the Seven Persians.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay,
got into a weird area.
Yeah, I don't understand what you're saying.
I don't know.
Can I continue with the movie's
racism.
Plot?
Yeah.
Terrible about racism.
Now,
go back to how much you hate dwarves.
Oh boy.
So the
we're gonna get letters.
Yeah, then I can sing a song about them.
Yeah,
so the characters are flying around forever. Chloe's running around forever. Chloe manages to get a phone call on the satellite phone from her dad, and he says, we need a runway. She decides she's going to clear off the east-west highway to the mall.
Yeah, it's over by the mall.
Famous New York landmark.
Uh-huh.
And so that they can land on that using that as a landing strip.
Anyone planning to visit New York should check out the mall.
But also, weren't you guys pointing out, like, I didn't hear the thing, but weren't you guys pointing out a problem with they couldn't land because of water, but you were like,
I couldn't. Well, he said
he made a point of saying that there's that JFK is surrounded by city, and if he can't find a landing strip, he's gonna crash the plane like a missile into Queens. Which there's a lot of problems with that statement.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he just try to land? Like, instead of being like, fuck this, just gonna missile it.
Well, by this point, he's pretty tired of being in the movie. So, we've also skipped that Nicolas Cage has come to the same conclusion by rifling through his co-pilot's clothes and seeing that he's a Christian, and also rifling through the clothes of a flight attendant who was raptured out. He realized, oh no, it must have been the rapture, because all the people who were taken were Christians. So he knows what happened at this point.
Wait, so I have a question.
For some reason also, the rapture has interfered with the satellites around the Earth, making their phones not work properly. So I guess the satellites also believed in Christ. But anyway, continue.
So my question is, so he realizes that Herman's Head is a believer because his watch has John 3:16 on it, right?
I think that's a wrestling thing.
No.
He's just a Steve Austin fan.
No, I know it's a big thing, but what is it, Dan? What is John 3:16?
It's believe in me and you'll have eternal life, right?
Why does Stone Cold Steve Austin talk about that all the time?
Well, he has Austin 3:16, which I think is know your role.
Just because I grew up in the church does not mean that I actually
literally
know.
You were an orphan who was found by Quasimodo.
Yeah, that's right.
You were raised in a bell tower.
Should we call your dad and ask him what that means?
Right.
No, I don't think it's John. Is it Matthew 3:16?
No, it's John.
John 3:16.
Oh, I'm all in my head now because no one will tell me what it means.
Well, I'll just look it up right now.
It's not like we have little phone computers in our pockets.
It's the verse that
I can't believe you don't know that.
So John 3:16 is, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son. That's what it is. that whoever believes in him shall live forever. Yeah.
Okay.
It's yes, it's about Jesus. It's from the New Testament. The whole thing's about Jesus.
It's the one about Jesus cursing a fig tree and the fig tree wilting.
It's the part about, and so Jebediah begat Jebediah.
It's the one where the guy curses children who are calling him bald, and bears come out of the woods and kill the children, which is an actual verse.
Yeah,
I love how you know that one and not the one that everyone has tattooed on there.
That's the best verse.
So John 3:16.
Wait, is there a fig tree in that verse? What happened to the fig tree?
John 3:16 is what you would call the New Testament's log line. It basically summarizes the gist of the whole thing.
Okay, yeah. Jesus.
Yeah, that's what it is. The watchword is Jesus. If you get one takeaway from this, it's Jesus.
Yeah.
So that's why he had that on his watch.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, he looks at his watch a lot.
Well, the problem is, though, that is it.
He's
every
like,
time
oh, I'm so caught up in my life. What time? It's Jesus time.
No, he looks at it. He always thinks, what time is it? 3:16. Oh, shit. No, it's like 4:45. I'm sorry.
He's late for appointment.
I'm so late.
Is it 3:16? Oh, I was supposed to wake up at 6. Oh, no, okay. Here we go. It is.
Yep. He's like, let me look at this ironic watch I bought as a goof.
Since I'm totally not a Christian, God checks everyone by their watch. So God.
I got
so
God.
I got him.
I got him.
He got up there and he's like, no, God, that was totally a goof,
it's
ironically.
A goof. Can you send me back down there?
Good. Why don't you stick around?
There's all these hipsters.
We need a jokester in here.
There's all these hipsters with Jesus is my homeboy t-shirts that are in heaven now, and they're like, wait, what?
Wait, they got to keep the t-shirts?
Yeah.
So they're Winnie the Poohing up there?
Yeah, they're wearing a t-shirt with no pants, which is somehow worse than being naked.
Your turkey neck comes out.
Also, their heads are all stuck in honey pots.
They're winning the
So she goes and she uses a truck and a motorcycle and a steamroller to clear this highway of debris. She lights a huge bunch of barrels of flammable liquid on fire so that they have
That's the kind of sign a Nicolas Cage can follow.
So they have a beacon. Nicolas Cage is like, I need a point of light so I can find it. And she
say it more like Nicolas Cage would say.
I need a point of light so I can see the runway.
What do you think,
now
Dan?
Say it like H.W. Bush, but make it 1,000 points of light.
Need to see the 1,000 points of light so
go.
I can see the runway.
Good stuff.
Come on, throw it at me. What else? Who else is delivering this line?
Now do it like Kate Bush.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what I sound like, but I need that runway.
Now do it like the bush in my front yard that I grew up with.
Russell, Russell in the wind. Russell.
Perfect.
Thank you. Thank you. I
miss home.
I actually spent a lot of time with that bush trying to get its voice patterns down.
You did a bush along.
Yeah. Walk a bush.
I'm a method busher.
So she starts flashing the brights on the truck and she's like, I'm flashing my brights. Does that help? And Nicolas Cage is like, no, honey, I need something bigger. And you know in his head the character's like, my daughter is an idiot.
He's like, don't make fun of her. She's trying.
And the co-pilot says, he says, she's like, I think I'm
glad he's graduated to fucking co-pilot
Sorry,
status.
Co-pilot. The reporter, who we haven't talked about, but he has a crush on Nicolas Cage's daughter, and he's spent most of the time
so far. He can't stop thinking about her since he saw her in the airport.
One Tree
Hill. Even when all this other stuff is going on that he definitely should be thinking
about. He's like,
about.
What's Chloe up to right now? Is she thinking of me? Yeah. One Tree Hill has mainly been sticking his
hearts on his notebook.
He's mainly been taking camera video footage of clothing sitting on chairs and sticking his camera in the face of mothers grieving for their disappeared children, going like, hey, what happened here? Tell me. But he's like, it's so funny because he's like, I got to get this footage. And it's just literally clothes lying on chairs. It could be it's just a messy apartment.
But also I love the moment where the woman that he's like – bothering in particular whose baby disappeared, how she freaks out eventually and she's like, we have to turn the plane back, we have to go back to the place where the baby disappeared, because it's like, yeah, the baby will be in the fucking like
just floating
it'll
in mid-air.
Be there.
Yeah, she thinks that they're pulling a flight plan on her.
Or like Undead, that Australian zombie movie where all the people are like floating in. Okay,
I haven't seen that one.
Don't worry about it. It has to do with floating people in the air.
I mean, that sounds great, but so he said, she said, I've only been able to clear 9/10 of a mile, and he's like, that's fine, that's fine, and not co-pilot. The reporter is like, that's not going to be enough, is it? And he's like, yeah, but if this doesn't work, I don't want to make her feel like it was her fault, even though it was totally her fault. She failed in her mission. But everything turns out okay, even though their landing gear gets clipped by some electric power lines.
And rips the fuck off.
They land, the crash land the plane. Everyone's safe. They get out, and they see the city in front of them burning, smoke rising from it. And either One Tree Hill or Nicolas Cage says, oh, I'm glad that's over. And Chloe says, no, this is just the beginning. Cut to credits. There's a song about how you better be ready because Jesus is going to rapture you.
But you did, you skipped the comic relief moment where the Muslim guy pushes the midget, pushes the dwarf down the inflatable raft.
Oh, man, she's covering her face. So embarrassed.
For those listening, when Hallie said the word midget, she literally flinched with embarrassment at having used the wrong term.
Yeah, but it was.
I make mistakes all the time. Just blame it on the beers.
I've never had a sip of alcohol.
Oh, wow. Somebody's trying to get raptured over here.
She's really rapture hunting.
Do you guys think God listens to your podcast?
I mean, God.
I mean, his eyes on the sparrow, so yeah. I know he listens. No, he's too busy.
Don't talk about birds. Oh, I got attacked by a bird today,
tell
people.
The story. We'll wrap it up.
Okay,
we'll
wrap it up. We got about 2 hours to hear the bird story.
No,
it all started with a dog fashion show.
That was your story, Stuart.
The Stuart Wellington story. Started at a dog fashion
My parents
show.
Met at a dog fashion
All right,
show.
You're confusing
so, Hallie,
the listeners.
You were walking down the street and a bird attacked you.
Wow, you really ruined that story.
Walking
Is
quickly.
Is there more to it?
Yes. It attacked me, and I ran away screaming. And then it attacked me again. Twice.
You made the enemies with the wrong bird.
I didn't do anything. I love birds.
Maybe the way you were running was provoking that bird.
Yeah.
What?
I said maybe the way you were running was provoking that bird.
You're right. And I was dressed in very short running shorts.
Do birds like that?
I don't know. No, apparently not. This was a real Bible thumping bird.
I think
this bird was about to be raptured.
Like we're dressed like a pine cone that had been with peanut butter on it and seeds on that peanut butter. So I think, I mean, that's really going to attract the bird.
She had a job interview.
I wanted to look my best.
You got to dress for the job you want, Elliot.
I was being interviewed by a cabin.
So we should wrap up this segment. Is this a good bad movie, a bad movie, or a movie we kind of liked? I'm gonna say that it's marginal, but I'm gonna give it a good bad movie. It's pretty silly. I wish it was a little sillier, especially with Nicolas Cage's performance. He's doing an incredible job.
He's really he's like the
the rock on which he'll build the church.
Yes. I was going to say like the anchor. Like he's so stable compared to the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And you want him to be crazy, but it's in the tradition of big name actors doing movie roles where they're sitting down for most of the performance. Like mm-hmm. he's doing an okay job, but you want him to be crazy. But yeah, I would say good, bad also.
What do you guys think?
What's the – oh, go ahead.
Spookily horrifying.
No.
Scarily dumbness.
Or good, bad. Yeah, I guess I'll give it a good bad. It was goofy enough. I wish it went a little bit faster, and I wish it got a little bit crazy, crazier. There's a few too many scenes of the daughter, Chloe Steele, just wandering around this town, and I wish they'd
New York City.
I wish they'd made New York City just a touch more crazy.
Yeah. There's one scene where a guy who looks like a juggalo is thrown out of a window, and then a guy who is like some kind
looks
of,
like Donald Logue.
That looks like Donald Logue, but like with shoulder length, kind of like Elizabethan hair.
Sounds like Donald Logue.
He looks like Renaissance Reservoir Dogs.
Sure.
She puts a shotgun in her face, and it's this glimpse of the crazy movie it might have been.
And there was that scene in the nursery at the hospital where there was a whole bunch of raptured baby clothes, and then one crazy lady who was like, they took them. They took all those babies.
You totally called it.
I think Dan called it.
Oh, Dan called it? Yeah, while we're watching it, Dan's like, oh, and there's like a crazy person who's like, they took all the babies.
Where did the babies go?
Hallie, you didn't give a judgment. What do you think?
Well, is there a middle of
good
the
good movie, bad movie? Or the just bad movie, good bad movie, or movie kind of liked?
Movie kind of liked. I thought it was in the middle. I wouldn't say it's a
Well, wow, there were definitely moments during this movie, Hallie, where you were like, this movie sucks.
That's what I'm saying. I fucking hate it.
It came around.
Well, it exactly. It came around, but It was 110 minutes long, and it's not much happened in it.
It is very slow.
Yeah.
It has like three locations.
I think it's weird because it's based on the first part of a 16-part book series.
It's based on Paradise Lost.
It's not like they don't have adaptation. A lot of material, but they really like – they wanted the rapture to be like the one thing that happened in this movie and then the plane crash. And yeah, there's not a lot of other stuff that happens.
But it also just made me sad how like – terrible Nicolas Cage looked. It was like when you see a building that's being dressed for a set and they like make a face, like a fake facade on it, because it was like his hair was clearly fake. He was wearing blue contacts. Like it just looked like he was such a shell of a like shriveled man beneath all of these physical props.
Now I'm sad.
Yeah, there's a little mummy underneath it all.
Ty is a pedantic person. I think when he pronounces these words, it's in a very show-offy way. Gyro.
Gyro.
Sacre bleu.
Sacre bleu.
Ayers Rock.
Uluru.
What you are witnessing is real. The participants are not actors. They are actual litigants with real cases. They call in via Skype to Judge John Hodgman's court, the real people's court. Now I call you to Judge John Hodgman's internet court. Find it at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
I'm Jesse Thorne.
I'm Jordan Morris.
The federal government has millions of dollars in programs and opportunities that you need to seize today.
You're a taxpayer, right? Well, then you've got it coming.
Thanks to Uncle Sam, you can get grant programs for veterans.
Unlimited access to our nation's most erotic natural history museum.
Fruit for you and your family.
The opportunity to tell the Department of Water and Power to go suck a dick.
Your own personal radioactive brick.
A real wearable bull detector. A kite that won't let everybody know you're a sexist.
Greyhound tickets. From here to there to everywhere.
Access to a variety of dolphins. Handfuls of sweet, fleshy crawdads.
Sensual songs of the South Seas.
A real live slap fight with the guy who played the president in The Fifth Element. Access to your public library's secret stash of saucy nudist films from the 1920s.
Don't wait, right now.
For all of this and more, drop us a line.
Jordan Jesse Go, 123 iTunes Street, or wherever you download podcasts.
But we should move on to letters from listeners.
Letters from who? Letters from who? Letters from you? The listeners at home? Take it, Hallie.
Letters from you. It's the listeners at home. Why do you listen and why do you live at home?
Why don't you live somewhere other than home?
Just try something new. Why not like a shoe?
Live in a shoe. Live in a shoe and write us a letter about you and your life in the shoe.
And thanks for being part of our crew.
All right, I like it. You guys won me over by the end.
Short and sweet, just like Dan likes it.
Just like the dwarf in the movie.
He was sour.
Not quite sour.
So,
and he was never redeemed, by the way. He just got punted down the
emergency slide.
I was really hoping there was going to be that scene between the Muslim guy and the dwarf, and they're like, "God damn it, I respect you," or something.
Yeah.
Like do a warrior clasp at the bottom of the fucking slide.
I respect your devotion to Islam. I respect your devotion to dwarfism.
Wait a minute.
We don't really have a choice about that, but Dan, read us some letters. Spin us a tale.
Reach into that mailbag of yours.
Read us a letter. You're the letter man. Read us a letter tonight.
This is about the
read of a letter man. David Letterman, that is. Da 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 da. Right, this the Late Show. Da da da. Paul Schaefer.
It's from Elan, last name withheld. I've had a long-running fascination with a certain type of song that used to appear on movie soundtracks.
Letter song.
And to be clear, usually on the soundtracks of bad movies, but appears to have fallen out of favor. This is a song that was not merely written for the movie and inspired by its themes, but is about the movie or the characters in the movie.
Hmm.
The distinction I'm drawing is between your Danger Zone and your On's Our Own. Like, the former, Kenny Loggins' Top Gun, is at some points explicitly about flying airplanes, but it doesn't, for example, break down the beach volleyball match, mourn Goose's fiery death, or mention that literally everyone in Top Gun, including Kelly McGillis in a suit, wears the same white beefy pocket tee. Danger Zone is evocative of the Top Gun-iverse, but that's all. If Top Gun was suddenly stricken from our collective memory, Danger Zone would not provide any clues that it ever existed. Similar tunes? Weird Science by Oingo Boingo. Footloose by Kenny Loggins.
I don't know. Which ones? They talk about pictures from a magazine, My Creation.
That's all that true. Stuff. Who's That Girl by Madonna. Friday by Ice Cube. Fame by Irene Cara. He's Got Game by Public Enemy. The Neverending Story by Limhal. Virtually every title track to a Bond film. Now.
Goldfinger?
What about... Oh, that's pretty specific.
It's pretty non-universal that there's a man with the Midas touch. Mm-hmm. Who tries to convince you to do bad stuff.
I think the key is plot elements, okay. And I'll get onto it
plot elements.
In a moment.
Well, there's that part in Goldfinger where it's like, he'll cover you in gold till you're dead.
That's right.
Look up for a job.
The guy with the hat that kills.
He doesn't expect you to talk. He expects you to die from a crotch laser. Goldfinger.
On Our Own, Bobby Brown, Ghostbusters 2, is a different story altogether.
Oh, man.
We hear about, quote, throwing a party for a bunch of children while all the while slime was under the building. And learn that the Ghostbusters, who are, quote, in control, once called, quote, grabbed their proton packs off their back and they split. No subtlety here.
But he also sang that Addams Family rap. That's the same
shit.
I thought
that was MC Hammer who did that one.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
About how they kick what they do what they want to do and play what they want to play and kick and they stop a friend. Adam's Family.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Similarly, literal movie songs: Adam's Family, Woomp by Tap Team, Adam's Groove by MC Hammer, Bat Dance by Prince, Ninja Rap by Vanilla Ice, Turtle Power by MC Hammer, Men in Black and Black Suits Coming, Nod Your Head by Will Smith, Wild Wild West by Will Smith, Drew Hill and Kool Moe Dee, Deepest Bluest by LL Cool J.
Is this someone's PhD thesis?
I think you've got City of Crime, the rap song from Dragnet.
Well, now, the Goonies song, what category does that fall under?
That is, I would say, the first category.
I mean, the Goonies are good enough.
Does not say anything about the actual plot of Goonies.
That's true.
Just says the name and identifies them being good enough.
Anyway, where do you stand on this trend? I can never make up my mind. Many, more or less all of these songs are embarrassingly bad cash grabs. Some are catchy as hell. Some are good, bad, and I even kind of like some of them. Particularly MC Hammer's super catchy and super detailed Turtle Power. Why did it stop? I kind of miss these dumb soundtrack tunes and feel they need to be reintroduced for serious, artier films. Maybe get Springsteen to gruffly run through the plot of Winter's Bone.
He kind of did that with The Wrestler, right?
Yeah, and Philadelphia a little bit.
Yeah.
Both.
I guess Streets of Philadelphia is not really about AIDS, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to skip to the end because you're wrong.
Wait, but doesn't the Turtle Power song mention Raphael as the leader of the group? That's incorrect.
Doesn't he mention Heroes
in a Half
Shell?
He's the coolest one.
He is the coolest. Doesn't what?
Never mind.
I didn't hear what you said. What did you say?
I said, doesn't he mention Heroes in a Half Shell?
Well, that's mm-hmm. the theme song.
And Turtle Power?
Oh, I thought MC Hammer sang that.
I don't think so.
Star of the show, Hallie Haglund.
See, she's slowly revealed herself over time to be the star of the show.
Mm-hmm.
You get the drift. There's only a few more sentences, and they're not key.
Wow.
That's
editing on the fly.
That's Elan's letter.
Well, I mean, I like a good song that describes the plot of a movie, but mm-hmm. they're usually, yeah, like you're saying, not very good songs.
I miss the days when you could pop in a VHS cassette of a movie, and then after the movie, yeah. they would show the music video for that song, like... Famously, Dream Warriors by Dokken at the end of Nightmare on Elm Street 3. Yeah, where Freddy wakes up and he realizes that he has been haunted by Dokken in his nightmares.
On Terminator 2 on the tape, I think they had that You Could Be Mine video.
That's amazing. Yeah. Too much bitch slap rapping.
That's the problem, guys. I, you know, with my bitch slap rapping and my cocaine tongue, I just get
you get nothing done.
Yeah.
You're a real waste of ammunition.
About you.
Yeah, no, I like a good song that recaps the plot. Say you fell asleep watching the movie.
Sure.
You need that
yeah,
song.
Say that,
it's Cliff's Notes.
Say that these shadows had offended, and you want to think this, that all's, so all's mended, that while they appeared, you'd just slumber here. Mm-hmm. Then the song tells you what happened.
Yeah, they, then you get, you get Oberon's rap by MC Hammer.
About casting a curse spell on his wife to make her fall in love with an ass-headed man.
Yeah.
That would
special
be,
guest mustard seed.
I totally wish that whenever anyone does a Shakespeare movie, they have to put a rap song that recaps the plot at the end of it, where all the characters are like are now rapping and dancing.
Yeah. And the rapper's like, oh, there's so many turnabouts in this. So much cross-dressing. I don't know if I can...
The one for, like, Troilus and Cressida, Coriolanus, they're like, what happened in this again?
So thank you for that. Eland, last name withheld.
Isn't that a kind of, like, antelope or gazelle in Eland? Eland, I think they're called.
How does he spell it? Or she?
It's spelled E-L-A-N. So...
Elan?
It's like...
No?
No, the pronunciation's spelled out, I think.
Yeah, he gave the pronunciation.
Okay.
But yeah, it would be Elan.
But it's not.
If it was the word that's spelled the same. That's pronunciation corner with all of us.
We did a great job.
Continue.
Slave.
So this is from Joaquin, last name withheld.
Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix.
No. Don't be shy.
And it says, Dear Radio Zork. In order to open the door, we need to know what it looks like with regards to, I don't know, weird keyholes and handles and stuff. Therefore, I vote that we, and here's a prompt sign, look at door. Look at door.
I'll handle this one. You see a door.
So I hope that
okay,
helps you guys.
Remember, your choices are to try the key on the door.
That's A, right?
A, to try the key on the door. B, to turn the knob. Or C, to push the door without using the key.
What about option four?
What is option four?
I believe option four is wait outside the door for another guest to arrive.
Ah, that's true. There's always that. So A, B, C, or four. Those are your options.
Coincidentally, or not so coincidentally, since I chose these letters.
Oh, what a spooky coincidence.
The watchmaker has revealed his design.
Do you want to play a little game?
Truly, Dan does not play dice with the universe.
The final
play a little game.
The final letter of the night is from Dave, last name withheld, who
the
writes
letter of the night
from Dave Navarro.
Yeah. He writes,
yep.
Dear Flophousers, rejoice.
Coalhousers.
Rejoice, for Radio Zork already exists, sort of. My friend, Jared Sorensen, is a game designer.
Jared, son of sword.
Sorensen.
Born on a battlefield.
Sorensen.
Son of Sauron.
All right. He's a game designer.
Child of the Dark One.
A couple of years ago, he designed Action Castle, a party game in which a player takes on the role of computer when you play Zork.
Placed on the show Castle.
Gather a group of friends and take turns issuing commands to the parser, whom the game encourages to respond in the infuriating, literal way we all remember from classic Zork.
Huh.
It's a small game that fits on a double-sided sheet of paper. I've enclosed a link to a PDF version so you can check it out. If you like Action Castle, Jared wrote six or seven other versions with different settings, including Space Station, Spooky Manor, Z-Ward, a zombie adventure, and Action Castle 2. Here's the link.
More Castle-in.
I hope you all get a kick out of it. But given Stuart's deep-cut tabletop RPG references, I suspect he might like it the most. Stuart, you made a Shadowrunner reference in one of the podcasts that included a reference to a person not having a social identification number, a sin. Please know that at least one chummer out here knew what you're talking about. Watch out for the GRU, Dave, last name withheld. I've printed out Action Castle here for Stuart.
Oh, great. So am I going to play this? Oh, that does look cool. How many new yen would this cost? That's another Shadowrun reference.
I don't want mana on all that stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, my nerdiness is, it was just in the area of being socially awkward.
Well, that looks really
cartoons.
Great.
That's true.
I like the font they use for the name Action Castle. It's spelled out with bricks, and there's a wooden door there. you know, I think
it's got it all.
Yeah. It's something I would want to write a paper with. Like, or at least a suicide note. Like, don't need these wingdings anymore. Let's use the action castle font.
Suicide note and wingdings. Yeah,
if you cared about me, you would fucking decipher it.
I guess type it in and then convert it to another font. You're like looking through all the individual wingdings.
It's a long note too.
Oh boy.
I wish you'd emailed this suicide note to me and I could just cut and paste.
No, we cut it out of a magazine.
Ransom style. I can't let anyone know. I can't let you know whose suicide note this is.
You cut wingdings out of a magazine.
Take $30,000, leave it in a bag under the bench in the park. I killed myself.
Donated all to charity.
I see
him. Or you'll never see me again. Psych, you never will anyway. It's a suicide note.
Yeah, thank you for that game. It sounds...
Yeah, it's great.
How many suicide notes do you think have psych in them?
Suicide.
Or like...
Of this TV show, Psych.
Or a suicide note says like, I had a great life, I was really happy, not from me.
When I was growing up, I definitely had a black t-shirt that had in very large white letters, it just said not across it, and I thought it was hilarious.
I would wear that today. I wish I had that shirt.
Because you're totally a hipster star of a podcast.
Yeah.
Hallie seems pleased by that.
No, I was just, yeah. Go on.
So
I cut the sleeves off.
Right? No, there's one home? Final.
What's the final part of this
final
thing?
Final judgments? We did that. No, it was a good, great movie.
We recommend a movie that we actually
We talked
like.
About music.
Yep.
Is there any time?
Recommend a movie that we actually like. Unlike the
we
movie
don't like
that
movies.
We
you might
tonight.
Even say we hate movies.
But hey, we're not allowed to because of copyrights.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going to quickly
Copy
go
wrongs.
Through this. I went to there at the Film Forum. They were doing a series of double features.
Did
of,
you go, travel there by plane?
I don't get that joke.
Just, I'm just fishing.
Slowing down the... You guys were just complaining
about... Yeah, I'm
about,
the one slowing the podcast down. I'm sorry, guys.
So...
Dan, did you have popcorn while you were there?
What?
Oh,
why are you doing this?
Oh, mother of God.
You guys wanted to get out of here.
I
and
gotta
now
go
just...
home and buy my not t-shirt.
So...
You gotta get home before the birds come out.
Oh, my God. Seriously.
Anyway...
There,
there was a series of true crime double features at the Film Forum, and it was one of these cases where I didn't know the films that were playing, but I just sort of took a chance on it because you figure that the programmers there know what they're doing, and you're going to see something interesting. And I saw a movie that I really enjoyed called The Phoenix City Story, which was based on the actual story of...
The Phoenix.
Phoenix City.
Greek mythology.
And Phoenix is spelled without an O, so if you're looking it up... Spell it in a way that looks like you're misspelling Phoenix. But this was a town that was notorious for having a bunch of gambling, prostitution-associated criminal enterprises. And it was cleaned up by a crusading guy who wanted to be district attorney who ended up being shot down in the streets there. It's a very gritty movie. It's a surprisingly sort of brutal film noir that I had never heard of before that involves, among other things, a child being killed and thrown out of a car, which you don't expect to see in one of these movies.
Ever.
Yeah, ever. In a modern movie, you don't expect to see it. And it was
don't
directed...
Don't even dare to dream.
It was directed by Phil Carlson, who is sort of a journeyman director, who also directed Kansas City Confidential. And he directed Walking Tall, which is interesting to me because The Phoenix City Story is a movie that takes a strong stance against vigilante justice when cleaning up a town, whereas Walking Tall is very much in favor of walking around with a 2x4 and hitting people to clean up a town.
The Hacksaw Jim Duggan story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So The Phoenix City Story is what I recommend. Anyone else?
Hallie, have you ever seen a movie before?
Yeah, I have a recommendation.
Oh, The Notebook comes out.
Yes. I want to recommend a movie I saw last year, or I think probably. Doesn't matter, because you're going to see it, not last year.
Last Year, I Think Probably at Mary in Bed.
It's called Only Watch This Movie If It's the Year That You Hallie Watched It. No. It's the movie We Are the Best, the Swedish movie by Lukas Moodysson.
Probably pronounced properly.
Okay. So
what's it about?
So it's about these young, I think they're like in junior high, rockers who, these young girls who form this punk rock band and are badass. And the minute I saw it, anyone I knew who had like a close to teenage age girl, teenage age girl, I recommended it to, because it's just like such an, like, you never want to walk out of a movie and genuinely feel like, oh, that was a really feel good movie. Because when that word even occurs to you, you feel like a cliche, but this was a feel good movie. This was so good. It's based on a graphic novel that his wife wrote, Coco Moodysson, I guess. That's called
The Gorilla?
No, Never Goodnight, it's
Coco
called.
The Gorilla, yeah. Yeah, she dictated it in sign language. It's mostly about a kitten.
Whatever, I researched this. I have facts to deliver you, okay? Also directed Show Me Love, Fucking Almo, together, Lilia Forever.
He did Lilia Forever?
Yes.
That's a depressing movie.
Well, that's what I just
said. It's a good movie. It's super depressing.
I just said he did it. Okay, so now you legitimized him. So it's a good movie.
Now that I, a white male, have said that it's okay.
Yeah.
Give
my words voice, Elliot. So We Are the Best. I recommend it.
Should I go next?
No, I'm going to go, hey, guys, it's me, Stuart. I'm going to recommend a movie that I'll even say it's a slightly qualified recommendation, but I recently watched Ex Machina, which is a movie that came out this year, 2015, I think.
You weren't sure what year it was now?
No, somebody check on your iPhone, Ellen.
Somebody get a penny from today.
And it is a...
Take a picture with it.
It is for my suicide note. So Ex Machina
left a picture of himself with a penny and then a page of Wingdings. What are we supposed to do with this?
I don't know, but he was clearly depressed.
So Ex Machina is a science fiction thriller, and it is a movie about a young man who works for a Google-type company who gets invited to spend the weekend at a top-secret research facility / home by the head of that company, who is like this crazy, like, Steve Jobs character played by Oscar Isaacs, who has probably the best bald beard action I've seen in a long time. And this elusive head of this company introduces this young contest winner to this experiment that he's performing. And it is a thriller that ends up not being all that thrilling at times. It's not...
But it's creepy. It has a creepy, pervasive creepiness.
Which is true, but it's not... I don't think it's patient enough to really consider it like a good thriller. However, it is a beautiful movie. The performances are great. There's some really great scenes, including this amazing dance scene with Oscar Isaac. And it has some really great gender... like a really interesting commentary on gender, and it's so I think it's a really great movie, and it stuck with me. It just doesn't necessarily work as a thriller
I think I liked it a little bit more than you. I would have recommended it this week if I hadn't already sort of decided on what my recommendation was, and the main guy is great, but particularly Oscar Isaac and the woman who does the robot, I mean, that Alicia Vikander, like, they were
that's
amazing.
A breakout performance for her. It's kind of amazing.
I want to see that movie. I haven't seen it yet. I was going to recommend, I wanted to recommend a religious movie to keep in theme with Left
Behind.
The
Name of the Rose.
Because even though I am not a Christian, I often find myself touched and inspired by overtly Christian works of art. Unfortunately, two of the movies that I thought of to recommend, I've recommended already, A Matter of Life and Death and Winterlight. So I've decided this is also going to be a slightly qualified recommendation because I think this movie is more interesting than great. It's like a not a bad movie, but it's more interesting than anything else. And it's called The Next Voice You Hear. And it's a movie from 1950 where one night at 8:30, God appears on the radio and just kind of talks through the radio to everyone on Earth. And he
says, "Hey, what's up?"
He's like, "Hey, I'm taking requests. I'm going to slap some platters on the matter. I got a stack of black shellac. Medications and medications.
Going out to Ginny in San Diego."
So he's like an old, like he's an old-timey
Gary
radio
says
host.
He's sorry.
Like going out to 100,000 Malaysians. It's a tsunami. Let's take it away. But you never hear.
You know what you did.
But you the audience never hears what God is saying over the radio, and people are not quite sure what's going on. But as opposed to Left Behind, where you're seeing something religious has taken place and the result is devastation and chaos and fire, this is a much more like small scale and kind of calmer and contemplative movie where a family and the people they know are kind of trying to wrap their heads around the idea that God is actually reaching out and communicating to people and through this very common manner of the radio. And it's like it's not an amazing movie. It's directed by William Wellman, who did direct a number of amazing movies. But it's an interesting movie, and it's a, like an it's just an interesting thing to see. It's the kind of movie that I have trouble seeing someone making now because it's both overtly religious, but it's not 2012, you know, or like, you know, it's not apocalyptic, you know.
And that's called Destiny Turns on the Radio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's got Nancy Travis and Gwen Tarantino. It's called the Next
it's
Voice
super
You
90s.
Hear. Yeah.
About as 90s as it can get.
Yeah, they're all eating whatchamacallit.
They're all listening to the single soundtrack.
Wearing Hypercolor.
In every scene. They're all like, what about this President Clinton, huh? I hope he never has an extramarital affair.
Let's all watch Party 5.
Hey, the X-Files is on, and then Seinfeld.
So, guys, thanks for being here. Thanks for being a friend.
Allie, thanks for starring in the podcast once again, as you do every week.
Thank you for having me as the star.
Sharing the limelight with us a little bit.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You don't sound like I'm welcome.
Super dismissive.
Allie's already calling her Uber. So we should sign off. For the podcast, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
I think I'm Elliot Kalin.
And the star.
And I'm Hallie Haglund.
As herself.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Hallie, do you want to do the intro?
Oh, I don't
do
think I'm
it,
qualified.
Or do you want it to be a surprise for when you?
Yeah. We just do it
when
and
you
then
announce
at the end
your
you go,
voice
with me.
Yeah, you guys do the
intro. All right, in 3, 2. Hey, on this episode, we watched a little movie called Left Behind.
No, don't leave me behind. I want to be in the episode.
Oh boy. Let's do that again. We watched, and this happened.
Cagemus.
Oh yeah, mention that it's Cagemus in July.
No, we'll do that.
Look, I bet we go jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle bells.
On this episode, we watched Left Behind.
It's Cagemus in July. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle bells.
Jingle all the way.
Should we do another one?
Yes.
Okay.
We watched Left Behind.
Did you want to say on this episode?
No.
Should we do another one?
Sure.
Can we just keep doing these all night?